Hey, this is Amir. I play Aram on The Blacklist, and you are listening to The Blacklist Exposed.
Well, clearly Aaron has all the trumps, and I'm the dummy this week. Regardless, I think we all won the hand with this week's episode. Welcome to The Blacklist Exposed. I am Agent Troy Heinrichs.
And I am Agent Aaron Peterson, and once again, I also had a thing for my therapist. Sorry, this isn't chair day. Thanks for joining us this week as we conclude our discussion of number 24 on The Blacklist, The Director, or as I like to call it, good night, director, and good luck. Movie fans, you'll get that. The conclusion aired January 14th, 2015, written by Lucas Ryder and directed by John Terlizzi. Show notes and other intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com. Just a quick note before we get into this episode tonight. If you missed the special fan video chat the other night that we did, which was fantastic. Dad joke. Dembe himself, yes, Hisham Tafik, he joined us, as well as we had a nice little bonus from John Bokenkamp, the showrunner. He popped in for a little bit. You can catch the replay of the event over at the website, theblacklistexposed.com. Just find the podcast fan day post, and the video is actually embedded in that page. It was a great time, and thanks to all of you who came out. I think we're going to also put the audio out at some point, right?
At some point, yeah. We're going to find a hole in the schedule, and we'll put it out then.
Okay. We've also got, you want to tell them about the special episode coming out on the 20th?
Oh, yes. We do have one, Nicole Phillips. She is the mastermind behind the comic book, and she was on, chatted with us earlier this week, so we're actually going to put that out midweek this week, so that's a Wednesday episode release. So if you're interested, because guess what? The second series starts on Wednesday, January 20th. From Titan Comics. You can go to NBC.com, go to the show's page, go to The Blacklist, and there's a spot right on there where you can get the comic, literally look for get the comic, and then you can go ahead and order the first issue of season 2 or series 2 of the comic book. That would be awesome, because it's going to be really good, because we're talking about fire.
fire. Yeah, and it's a great interview, and also she did write episode 13 that's coming up, so look for that too. Oof, man, this was a crazy week, and this was a full-on Danny Ocean remake, I think. Great episode. I think the conclusion might have been better than the last week's. What do you think?
I think both of them could have been back-to-back in a nice 90-minute movie in the theater. I mean, this was just spot on.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. Fun episode. Very, very fun, and there's a lot of pieces in place that we're going to talk about here shortly for the future of the series.
That there is. Now, we asked you last week, though, before we get into this week's discussion, what do you think Venezuela's role will be in the plan?
And do we know how to pick these questions or what? Because once again, bam, answers. But how close were you? Because now we know the answer. Because like we always say, they answer the questions really quick on the show. Rory said, I am curious to see if they tie in Venezuela being considered a national security threat by Obama last year and use this against the cabal members based on what Red found with Marvin Gerard in the fulcrum.
It's a good guess.
Mm-hmm. Andrew said, I think they will be providing manpower to Red's Justice League. It's more like the Redvengers. Even though they're not supposed to be doing covert operations on foreign soil.
And yes, you must use Redvengers as the hashtag on Twitter as much as possible.
That's right. I'm coining that phrase. I'm going to make it work, even if people don't like it. Kristen said, a place to lay low if it comes to that. Nothing ever happens the way I expect them to. That's fair. Chuck said, well, even with Chavez's death in 2013, Venezuela maintains close ties with China. In fact, the $5 billion loan, it's a little heftier, mentioned in last week's episode is actually fact, having been obtained from China in April of 2015. Chuck, bringing the facts.
Love it.
They are the biggest bankroller of the Venezuelan economy. The U.S. imports about 7.3 million barrels of oil each day, and about 10% of that is Venezuelan oil. I don't know if you guys are ready, kids, but you're getting a lesson right now. Venezuela gets 24% of its imports from the U.S., 24% from Mexico, and 17% from China. It may well be that the attack on the cabal will, in part, be due to the Venezuelan government cutting both imports and exports to and from the U.S. God, man, I bet the showrunners are listening going, why did we do that?
Yeah, no doubt. Because, I mean, gas prices have been dropping like a stone. I paid under $2 a gallon finally. I don't want that Venezuelan supply cut off. That's helping out.
That's great, man. I don't know if any of that's true, but I'm going to take it as true. We'll just pretend Chuck's from CNN. Sounds good to me. Patricia said, never thought of this, but could they being Venezuela, have gathered enough blackmail information to bring down the director or eliminate his escape route?
Mm.
Ding, 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 I would say. Kathy said, what about Vanessa Cruz from season 2, episode 17? Was she perhaps from Venezuela? Maybe she has some serious blackmail info on the director. I recall that Mr. Kaplan had a discussion with her at the end of the episode. Rich was thinking the same thing.
That would have actually been really cool if they could have figured out a way to bring Vanessa Cruz in to that equation, because they did have that conversation. So I wonder where Vanessa Cruz is going to pop up next.
Oh, she'll come back, man. She'll come back. James said, I'm sensing some kind of double cross for some reason. My gut tells me that Red may have made a mistake by giving him those plates. It feels suspect. You like how I'm saying everything all nefariously?
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, those are some great answers. I think maybe, was it Kathy? No, Patricia, I think, was close.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but unfortunately, never saw the hag coming in the Geneva Convention being brought in. That was actually a really nice twist. But we'll get into that. But first, our question for next week. We want to know from you.
Why does Red want a seat at the table?
That one came out of left field. Didn't see that coming at all. So we want to know where do you think season 3 is going to be going? Because I think that sets up the rest of the season.
Yeah, I would say.
Quite interesting. Well, with that, leave your weapons and cell phones at the door, people, because we are now going to discuss this week's case profile.
Oh, it's so funky. I like it. I like when you get a little heist music, man. Anything that has heist music in it, show, a movie, whatever, I get jazzed. I immediately want to start stealing stuff.
Oh, man, when James Brown came out, I was like, ow!
Do that again.
Ow!
You sound like you're in pain, man. You don't sound like James Brown at all.
Not at all.
Yow! You got to get into it. You got to feel it.
I got to see the chiropractor.
I think you hurt your sternum. Oh, man. Well, that is a true statement. When I hear heist music in an episode of anything, I get excited. And the fact that this was completely, I mean, the first half of it really is, it's like Red's 11. I mean, that is the entirety of the first half of the episode. It is getting the director, and it's done completely like a heist. Everybody has a role, which we'll talk about when we do the individual characters here in a minute. But essentially what this episode was, and there are 11 if you include like Tom, Wrestler, Kara Kurt, and what's that? Hippie
Boz.
Guy, Boz.
Yep.
Boz. Yeah, you get to 11. With the collection of our favorites and a wonderful recap of the season's events so far also happened in this episode, you got Red doing a nice little, here are the pieces that have been in place for the last 5 weeks, how breaking Gerard out put the plan in action, then all the steps that were taken to weaken the Cabal and the director, like Verdient and the Djinn. Does it all make sense to you now?
I think it does. I don't know if we needed the complete recap to break it all down, because I don't think any of the stuff that happened other than the fact that, oh, it's weakening the Cabal. I mean, they could have just said, we did all of that to weaken the Cabal. Because the plan itself, I don't think, needed all that other stuff to happen other than just to put a dent in it. I think the stuff in the first half of the season is actually going to be tied more to the last half of the season than it was to the actual plan itself.
Okay, well, two things. One, whenever you have a heist, you have to explain everything right before the plan goes into
action. Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's required.
That's like required, like writing 101, right?
It's required. If you don't have it, I am offended and I leave. That's how that works. Number two, I liked it because, you know, all these things that have happened this season, and I think, you know, throughout, we assumed it was all in, obviously they painted the picture like it was all going to work in conjunction with getting Liz out. But to see all the pieces come into place and to see how the puzzle works as a whole, I thought was great. That made it a lot more interesting for me as the viewer.
I'll buy that. I mean, it's not that I didn't like the recap.
You don't buy it. You steal it. That's the whole point. You steal it.
I just think the recap didn't actually deal with getting Liz's name cleared, I think is really what it was. I think doing what happened in director conclusion itself was enough. I don't think they needed all the other stuff to actually free Liz. So I really think the front half of the season is actually for what's going to happen in the back half of the season.
Oh, that's your opinion. Your opinion is that he just said that?
No, he said it because he needed to get the buy-in of the group. This is why I did all this stuff, because I needed you guys to help me out and believe it so that I could execute this one item. But really, everything in the front half of the season had nothing to do with it. It's actually part of Red's ultimate plan for the second half of season three. So he just used it to spin a story.
Disagree completely. You needed Gerard to work out the deal.
That one's the only one. That's
no.
The only one.
Verdient, you had to bring down the economy. You had to weaken the cabal to a degree so that the director's position weakens. You needed to make sure that that the bets that the director hedged did not work out. You needed to take his money away so he could not just escape. You needed to keep him in play, and that's what he did. But you also needed his position to weaken so that it could be utilized and he could be caught off guard. He's a little more scared. He acts erratically. I mean, you know, that's what I think. It all played into that. I think it all had to do with it.
I mean, because the director's position was already weakened because Solomon was already giving him crap, you know, right away in season opener. And he's like, hey, you messed up. You let Red go. The fulcrum came out. So I think the director was already weak. Maybe the money for the Golden Prayer shoot thing would have been the case that could have kept him with the cabal because he had nowhere to go. But that might be the only thing director-wise, because you could have still actually kidnapped the director, dropped him out of a plane onto a Dutch house without any problems, without having any of the other front half of the matter, except for Gerard. Gerard's the only...
Yeah, but he wouldn't be as dispensable then, or disposable then.
I don't know.
I like the way it went. Apparently you see it as a little deeper, intricate plot than I did.
It's got to be deeper, because we had to go all the way back to season one for General Ludd to be part of the plan.
It doesn't have to be deeper. Sometimes things are what they are, my friend.
Sometimes.
Maybe you're just seeing red.
I am the dummy after all, right?
That was a reference to blood. See that? It was a joke.
It was a joke.
He's a jokes.
But I am the dummy because you got it right. The director's dead. Team Aaron wins.
What? Called it. Whoever was on Team Troy, sorry, you're in a world of disappointment.
Yep. I am leading you down a dark and dangerous path. Don't follow me.
Maybe you shouldn't be listening to his dumb theory that he just explained, because maybe I'm right.
Which just really came into the flurry at the end of this episode. What?
Well, Red's plan, his ultimate plan, and I think we're going to get a lot more by breaking down the characters individually, honestly, rests on abducting the director and using his new relationship with Venezuela to convince Hitchens into making this deal to clear Liz. Or the director's handed over to Venezuela, which would in turn start a war. You want to elaborate on exactly what that meant?
Nobody from the U.S. has ever been tried for a war crime. And then the Hague Convention and the Rome stuff has actually been put into play so that if a country could, for some reason, bring a member of the United States forward, then the United States would be tried because the United States doesn't actually recognize the Rome Treaty. So in this case, what had to happen was somebody that's part of the Hague Convention needed to bring forward a criminal because they weren't actually going to, the convention itself wouldn't actually be able to prosecute directly. And they couldn't do it without a member of the United States to be present in person, because you can't just have a conversation without somebody actually standing there and getting the rights read to them, basically.
Well, it works. And our heroine, Liz, is finally freed. She rose up, so to speak, and is now out of the slammer. Are you excited that... Well, actually, did you see that twist coming? Like, she would actually be cleared of everything.
Well, she wasn't cleared of everything.
You know what I'm saying. I mean, she was cleared of everything except the murder of Connolly, with which she was given probation. I mean that she was cleared to the point where she was released and now can walk amongst us.
I figured that was going to be coming because, I mean, she's such an integral part of the show. But what I really do love is the fact that they weren't able to get her completely free. Because I saw the I saw the press release. And it's like, and now that Liz's name is cleared. And I was like, what? That's just that gang. No. She's got to pay for the director. She shot the dude in cold, or the, not the director, but the AG. She shot him in cold blood. So she has to suffer for that somehow. And I'm glad that they actually made her suffer by taking away her badge in a roundabout way because she's on probation.
Now, quick question. As a diehard fan of the show, obviously, which you are, because we wouldn't do a podcast if you weren't a fan. When that happened, okay, if she was completely cleared, let's say that the actual murder of Connolly was wiped under the table for whatever reason, would that have affected your opinion of this episode?
I think so, 100%. I think it was really great when you had the conversation to see Laurel and Red kind of going back and forth in the negotiations, and the fact that she's like, hey, there were witnesses, and you know, I can't just sweep this under the rug. He was a beloved man, and yada, yada, yada. So when that all happened, and then you have like the secret phone conversations and could you step out? And I think it was a way for Red to really say, okay, here's something that I need, but I'm going to give a little bit because I need something else from you, which is where we find out him sitting down with Laurel towards the end of the episode. So I think that would have really impacted how everything would have played out, because if it just went back to Liz is back, Cooper's back, okay, now we're at season one and we just start all over again. And I think that would have taken away from the show.
Yeah, I was really focusing on that when I was watching the episode. It got to that moment where I knew the deal was coming, right? Like the final deal, whatever that deal was going to be, was coming. And I actually was sitting on the edge of my couch, because if she would have been cleared of all of it and not found in any way complicit in the Connolly murder, I probably would have rose up and thrown my remote at the TV. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was that on the cusp of that, because that was the most important thing. And I've talked about that this season, that I think Liz is past the point of redemption. She should never be an agent again. And I've gotten a lot of flack from that, from some listeners that have been like, no, she can come back. What's blah, blah, blah. No, she shot a man cold blood. I don't care what he did. She represents the law. As far as I'm concerned, even if I love a character, once they go past that point, they shouldn't be representing the law anymore. You know what I mean? Like wrestlers, I mean, he's tiptoed a couple times, and yes, his drug habit was probably teetering there, but that was a personal thing. It wasn't affecting like his job. It wasn't breaking the law at work kind of thing. I mean, she straight up murdered somebody. You can't come back and be an agent then. I would have a hard time swallowing the legitimacy of the show if that were to happen.
The one thing that was kind of maybe, and we'll get into this maybe a little bit later with Tom, but the fact that Tom was just watching on the news and that Tom didn't show up at all, you know, to see her, it was interesting that they decided to focus on, you know, her and Red's relationship at the end versus Tom coming up and being the knight in shining armor. Because the biggest question I have is what did she write on the piece of paper?
On her will?
Yeah. Was it a note to Tom? Because she wrote Keen on the top. So was that Keen as in Tom Keen or Keen as in her name? You know,
and we'll never know. I mean, her name is Keen, so I'm assuming that that's why.
Right.
We'll never know because she ripped it up. But my question was, who are you leaving stuff to? You don't have anybody left. I mean, you're going to leave Red, your whatever's left in your apartment, your surveillance heavy apartment? I don't think so. So really, what do you got?
Or is this maybe she knows she's pregnant and blah, blah, blah,
will
blah,
you
blah.
Stop?
They're going
to
write the
I
baby into the
God,
show now.
If I could punch you through this freaking connection, I would. Right in the face. Shh. Until it's part of the show, it ain't part of the show.
That's exactly what I said. It's like, why is she leaving a will for, like, she going to leave what? The dog? Hudson part four?
Maybe. It could happen. You never know. Well, let's get into the characters. What do you think? Oof. And we're going to kind of, when it is really prevalent, we're going to include as a character the music. You know, we haven't done that before. It's always just been something we talked about where the music has been, yeah, it's great, and I can't believe the selection. But I got to tell you, it's become more and more, as the show has gone on, it's become a character of the show. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And I think this week especially, because it was just like the perfect songs for each of these three scenarios.
Yeah, Johnny Cash, James Brown, Andra Day. I mean, there's a lot of great choices here. What was your favorite one?
When James Brown came on and they were all coming out of the limo, I was like, dude, this has got the coolest vibe I have ever felt it. And then you get upstairs to find out how they're going to actually pull this off with recreating the sixth floor on the eighth floor. It was just spot on. And I wonder how much they had to pay to get James Brown for this episode.
Did you feel good?
Yeah.
I knew that you would. Yeah. Johnny Cash was mine. I love Johnny Cash. And well, I love like eight of his songs. The rest I can take or leave it, but there's like eight, and that's one of the, and it's just, man, he's just got that tone that like really, he sets the mood. You know, that's the kind of song that really sets the mood. James Brown is great for when you want to feel funky, and then the rest of it, I love the independent artists that they find, because it always seems to serve the story.
Right. Which has got to rise
it's
up.
It's never just like, it's not like Miami Vice where, hey, this would be cool while they're driving down the highway. Other characters, Karakurt, make you feel old that you knew that reference.
I just think it's like, what is like Liz have a giant stash or something from the 80s and she's driving her computer.
She's got her like pastel suit and she's just cruising. I would watch that episode. They should do like a flashback to the 80s.
You know, and that's what's funny. The show is at a point now where I think that would be really interesting. Not that I want to quote Alias, but I'm actually going to quote Fringe, because Fringe did a really good job.
You can only quote, apparently, three shows, Alias, right. Fringe, and Lost. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, you do 24 all the time, too. But in Fringe, there was a good backstory call. That they told that was in the 80s, and when they redid the 80s episode, they like redid like the credits and the opening and the music, and everything was 80s specific. Mm-hmm. So it'd be really interesting to see them use that kind of tactic in The Blacklist. I think that would be really fun, because the music
they could do it by
be,
flashback
yeah,
somehow.
Totally.
Yeah, and if you have a cop named Aaron Peterson, that would be fantastic, because I like pastel white or them white suits yeah. that Johnson used to wear. Man, he's a sexy dude. All right, well, that probably exposed a little bit more about my psyche than I wanted to. Karakurt doesn't want to talk, but apparently his sister is someone he does care about. Mm. I was kind of wondering how they were going to make him talk, even though, I mean, I think he felt sympathetic for Tom in the last episode. I was kind of expecting that to play out, like, you know, I've got nothing else. I mean, I'm dead no matter where I go. I'll do it for you kind of thing. But it didn't work out that way at all. Tom ended up threatening his family.
Yeah, and the sister then comes into play because now it's a character that maybe we get to meet at some point. Maybe it's part
Revenge.
Of a bigger thing. Yeah, exactly right.
Revenge on Tom.
She becomes a blacklister and Red's got to save Tom. It'd be interesting to see if Red would actually come to Tom's rescue.
Do you think he would?
I think he would. I think Tom served his purpose and did what he was told and came when Red needed him. So if you look at Red's psyche from the way he actually handled it with Aram last week, I think that because Tom came through with Karakurt and found him, that it was part of the plan. I think he would owe Tom a favor now.
Yeah. Well, Tom, speaking of Tom, he's a transportation or the turn. I mean, he's got the card that brings the house down in Karakurt. Do you feel like he had enough to do in this Red's 11 storyline?
It doesn't matter. He drove the Mustang. That's all that's important.
And you really love that car, don't you?
The car's awesome.
It is a pretty awesome car.
I was surprised that he pulled up in the Mustang, because I thought it got shot up at the end of the season 2 finale. So is this a different Mustang, or did he get some friends? Maybe Red's people, you know, redid his windshield for him.
Yeah, they just took care of it. You know, they have people that can do that. It doesn't cost much.
Right.
I hear Red's got money. The one thing I love is, like, he gets Karakurt out of the car and he takes him in. And you know Tom Keene's face has to have been all over everything a while back, right?
Right.
Like, his wife is a fugitive. There's no way his face hasn't hit the media. Nobody's like, hey, is that her husband? That was the only thing in the episode where I'm like, come on, somebody, you got the entire press corps there. Nobody notices this guy.
Yeah. And he puts him in and then he like walks right by the camera and then he gets back in the car and then squeals the tires as he rips off. Why isn't someone going like, hey, who was that guy?
Yeah. I mean, there should have been at least a 5 second where Tom just like, hey, what's up? Or something like that, where somebody said, are you Tom Keene or Jacob Phelps or whatever your name is? Nah, it's not me. I got it. Can't you see? I got stubble. It's not me. No glasses. Yeah, that was about the only thing in the episode where I was like, what? But it was still, I'm still warming to Tom. I'm still liking what he's doing, what Ryan's been doing with this character this year. He's really making him into a badass, and it's working. Dembe was the muscle. You know, every heist has the muscle. He was definitely the muscle. And what did you think about Mr. Stoic and his look at Aram when Aram's like, I love magic.
Yeah, I don't know what Dembe has against magic.
I think he was just like, take this seriously, man. Take it seriously. No jokes.
And if you missed it on Wednesday night when we had Dembe and John and everybody, Hisham, on for the chat. John
Dembe and Hisham are yeah. the same person, by the way.
When Hisham and John were kind of talking back and forth just before John got off, we were talking about what would be a cool show, and John was saying that wouldn't it be great if you had Aram and Dembe as the odd couple, and then they just kind of went back and forth, and Dembe's like making Aram work out, and you know he's yelling at him because you know Dembe's eating you know Aram's ice cream, and you guys can see the clip, so that when this scene happened about the magic and they looked at each other, I just busted a gut laughing because I was just thinking about that conversation we had on Wednesday night.
I would watch it. I would definitely watch it.
Yeah.
So there we go. NBC needs a few more sitcoms. I think that would work. Do that. Do that, NBC. Something crazy. We don't need more Voice. We need more Dembe and Aram sitcoms. All right. Mr. Kaplan, Red's better half.
Mm-hmm.
boy, were some people jumping on that line, huh?
No doubt.
They were like, does that mean they're a couple? Do you think it means they're a couple? I guess we should ask that, since a lot of people on the internet were.
No.
Okay. I didn't either.
Kaplan is his number two.
That's kind of how I saw it.
Who does number two work for?
Oh, no. That just happened. She is the orchestrator of this whole thing. She is the one getting the people together. She's deciding exactly what needs to happen. She's collecting all the weapons. I mean, that's really what her job is. She really is number two.
Why the phones, though? I can see the weapons, but why the cell phones?
Maybe just as a precaution, just in case one of them is a turncoat.
No pictures.
No pictures, no evidence, no recording, no way of, if anyone in there happens to be a mole of some sort, which always happens in these kinds of shows, then they can't collect any evidence.
Dang it, Boz, I knew you were the traitor. No, just kidding.
That poor guy. I mean, does he ever get any real lines?
I thought he had a couple during the Jin episode.
Yeah, but it's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
We haven't seen him since the Jin episode, I don't think.
No, not that I recall. I'm sure somebody is probably like, oh, you saw him in episode 8 at 53 minutes in, but I don't recall it. So we're going to say no, probably not.
He has a great shot, though. I mean, he shot out of the elevator there, not even looking, and actually made it past the glass doors without the bullets actually hitting the glass doors.
Oh,
just as it was closing. So.
Yeah. Well, that's about, was there anything else that Mr. Kaplan brought in this episode that I missed?
Just some really great looks.
Yeah. I think we're going to get like a backstory on her at some point.
Gosh, I want one so bad.
And we're going to get one. I think they're going to give it to us. What about Aram? I want to be a team player. I mean, he's like a kid in a candy store. Like, he's finally part of a heist, which I think in this episode, Aram was kind of like all of us. Or at least me, because that's exactly how I would act. I'm like, oh, I'm part of the team. Yay.
Yeah, he was like the Matt Damon character for Ocean's 11. He's like, oh, yeah. Can I come too? Can I come too?
Just very, very excited. And he's the tech guy. Every heist needs a tech guy. He's one that switches, makes the elevators go to the wrong floor. I thought that was a nice little twist and use of his advantage. So that was pretty good. And he makes the joke. I don't know if it's a joke, but Red is, you know, makes the crack about the therapist. And he asks the question, you were in therapy. And he says it like a, that's cool, you were in therapy. And Red kind of gives him a look and doesn't say anything. Do you think that was anything more than just a offhanded joke?
No, it was just an offhanded joke. But I think it was more around him saying things as if Red was like this master criminal, this, you know, cool dude. So he was like, dude, you were in therapy? I think it was more like that than trying to think like, oh my gosh, you had a wife?
Okay. Yeah, that probably makes sense. I was probably looking into that way more than I should have, which we sometimes do on this show. So I was just kind of like, I wonder if that meant something else. But you know what did mean something else? That look to Samar.
What I really loved about that is as Samar came over and then they kind of looked at each other, like Samar almost looked like she took a step back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if she was just swaying in place, but it looked like she took a step back, like, ooh, I'm not going to go sit over there.
It looked like she felt bad.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, oh, I don't, man, it's too soon. I don't want to deal with this right now. You puppy, broken puppy. Yeah. Oh, poor relationship. At some point, we're going to have a conversation, these two. But I think it's going to be a little bit.
Yes, it will. I'm glad that they also didn't force it either. So that way she was actually with Cooper rather than her having to work with Aram on his piece of the puzzle.
Right on. All right, well, Samar, my kind of girl, which I agree, she's my kind of girl. When what did you think about this when she shows up and has about 12 weapons? I think it's only 3, but it felt like 12 weapons just coming out of every orifice.
Yeah, it was very classic. This is somebody that's clearly a Mossad agent or someone that has deep ties to the criminal underground. I think this was absolutely well played that she pulls out, you know, 2 guns and a knife rather than a cell phone.
Right. That's so funny. I like that. Well, remember when Red recaps and mentions her brother, she gives a little look.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still not convinced that she is okay with this. Like, I think this is going to come back and bite Red in the ass at some point.
I think she's still dealing with the pain of the brother and the traitorness that it was to her, that this lie was being perpetuated her entire life. I don't think it was so much that she was upset with Red. I think she was still like, oh, the pain of my brother is still too close, but not that she's upset about the decision she made to give him over.
Okay. That could be it too, but I just got that. It was so, I don't know, man. It was almost, part of it was like, I wish I wouldn't have done that. It was like regret or reluctance or something along those lines. That's kind of how I read it. And I'm sure it'll come into play at some point, but that's where I went with it.
I think that would go against her character. I don't think Samara is ever full of regret.
No, I don't agree with that at all, man. Not at all.
She doesn't, because she doesn't regret sleeping with Wrestler.
I think she does. I think she regrets that she hurt Aram's feelings. I think that she regrets not being there for her brother. I think she just wears it. She wears it inside. She doesn't, like run around sobbing and weeping. She's a strong, independent person, and she wears it inside. I do think she has regret. You can tell by some of her mannerisms that she has regret or feelings for some of the things that have happened over the course of the series. And I think that's still there.
Okay.
My two cents, man. Mine. And her and Cooper are the cons, by the way. They are the cons of this. They have to con the director's wife into taking the wrong coffee so she can get a panic attack. And Cooper, man, was Red tired of Cooper asking questions or what?
I also love the fact that he kind of nodded to the, hey, you're looking better for what that's worth. like he almost knew that the setup of his illness last season was a complete setup.
Do you think he knew the whole time?
That's a really good question, because I was trying to play it back as he said that, and I was like, did he know? Did he know somehow?
I'm asking, what do you think?
I would say he has to have known. Otherwise, they wouldn't have thrown it in there.
I agree. I think that he knew. And I think, especially when we get the reveal at the end of what's going on here, and we'll talk about that a little bit more when we get to Red, but I think he knows more than we think he knows, and I definitely think he knew about that, and that would make for good television because it'll come back and bite Red in the ass at some point. Like, I'm a big believer that as much as Red seems to always have the upper hand, I think at some point that hand is going to start to be a little lesser. It's going to start to fold a little, and we're going to start seeing some of the pieces he's put in place come back to bite him in the butt.
Okay. Season 4
just makes for good television. I mean, if he's always on top of everything and nothing ever gets him back, I mean, wouldn't that as a viewer get old, I think, to a degree?
Yeah, probably.
I mean, it's cool and everything. I know everybody's like, no, we always want Red to win. And you always, yeah, absolutely. I'm saying eventually you always want him to win. But you don't want him to every single week. He always comes out on top.
And in this season, he hasn't come out on top a couple times. Right, he has been kind of in the predicament, right? Captured by the hillbillies, having to deal with a few other situations. So he hasn't always been that step ahead. So he is vulnerable. The question is where does that vulnerability lie, and who would be the most damaged if something were to turn around? Like, would his relationship with Cooper, for example, like we're talking about, would that affect Red in ways and Cooper in ways that it would be detrimental to Red? Clearly, Keen is going to be an issue because the director specifically, does she understand the relationship to you and why did you do this? I think that there are some people that ultimately could get under Red's skin if things went the wrong way.
Yep. And by the end of this episode, Captain Cool got his job back. And I say Captain Cool because that whole scene, like where he's just chilling, wearing the sunglasses. I mean, he just looked really cool.
What's he have against lattes though?
Because he gets that little
he gets the completely good latte and then he turns around and just throws it right in the trash. I was like, yeah, come on,
that's a good point, man. When he's walking out, I'm like, why'd you just throw that perfectly good coffee away?
Like $5, man.
Yeah, because he don't care about money, man. He's there to do a job. That's why you do the job when you do a heist.
And that was probably my one nitpick of the episode, was the barista actually puts the coffee down and they do the cup switcheroo. It's like, wouldn't the barista have seen that
and been like, hey, Bill Cosby, stop it.
Yeah, exactly. Or did they pay the barista off ahead of time?
Exactly. But who cares? It's television.
It's television.
I worked it. The barista probably wasn't paying attention. I mean, you've been to Starbucks. They're not really customer service oriented. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They just give you a coffee and get out. Get out. All right, Marvin Gerard. He's the knowledge of the heist. He works the system and he gets the deal done for Liz to finally be a free woman. I assume you saw this one coming into fruition.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Fisher Stevens is so good in this role too. I really loved the way he was actually, even before they started the plan in action, how he was like explaining stuff back at the, we'll call it the bar, the restaurant, the hideout.
Mm-hmm.
he's just such a really great way to kind of pontificate, and just his delivery and the fact that he's like talking and then he's like, hey, can I have a moment, please? So funny. It's like, get out of your office. I need the phone.
I like that back and forth. I thought that was really good. And the only thing that I was questioning, I mean, I guess because of the relationship with Red, they're just going to let him walk in and out of there.
Yeah.
I mean, because he is a wanted fugitive still.
Well, I think they negotiated a release or a pardon of some kind, didn't they?
If that would happen, I did not hear that. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but I didn't hear that.
More importantly, where's his fiance? Is she still on the banana plantation?
She's got to be. Yeah, she's safe. She's tucked away.
Are they going to go back to the banana plantation?
I don't know, Troy. I don't know. I hope not. I have no desire to go to the banana plantation. That's a Troy wish. It's definitely not mine. Oh, but Marvin Gerard brought us to Laurel Hitchens. Christine Lottie just jumped to the top of the cabal. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah. And Christine Lottie's been playing this character so well that I hope that this isn't the last we've seen of her. I hope, hopefully she'll be around for the better part of season three, because she's just been like spot on.
Why would you think it's the last we see of her? She's the director's gone. So, I mean, she's the one now.
Yeah, but the cabal's kind of like in the backstory now, except for whatever Red's going to be doing now that he's part of it. So I don't know if the cabal is really the main focus or if we switch to something else for the rest of the season.
Well, that's a good question. So what do you think is going to happen with her role going forward?
I mean, I would love to know who some of the other players are in the cabal. I think we're at that point where, and this was interesting, was the explanation she gives it during the press conference at the end of the thing, that the cabal was put into play specifically to instigate issues against Russia to restart the Cold War. So now that that's been put out there, what is the cabal? Is the cabal dead? Is it change its focus? Were there other countries involved in the cabal? There's a lot of questions, right? And if this all ties back to this bombing in Russia back in 82 that the Berlin saga was all about, it'll be interesting to see how this kind of, what other criminals come out of the woodworks now because the cabal's basically been exposed.
Yeah, I'm curious how we go forward. I think that she's going to be the bridge from Red to the actual leading members of the cabal, because I think the cabal still stands. They've been weakened, but I don't know how that works, though. And I guess, well, let's hold that thought, because we're going to get to Red, and that's really where all that's going to come into play. But she hired Mr. Iverson to take Liz out, then had to rat him out when Red's plan kicked in, and then slapped the blame on Connolly and Peter. That's what she did throughout this episode. One point on that, Mr. Iverson, that poor guy, that the assassin, I kind of felt bad for him. I mean, you know, he seemed really like he was just doing this for the money.
Well, yeah, anybody would do anything for the right amount of money, right?
Yeah, but I mean, he just, I don't know. He just had a nice, I don't know. I guess the way the actor played him, I felt a little sympathy for the guy. I'm like, oh, I feel like he's just caught between an X and a hard place.
If something happens to me, just make sure that my kids get the money, not my wife.
That's right, my ex-wife. That was pretty interesting. And how did you, I was shocked, honestly, that she managed to blame Connolly and Peter in that press conference, both of them. Because I really didn't see that coming. I thought it would be more, we were able to clear Liz and Connolly was a part of it and that was it. I did not see her throwing Peter under the bus.
Oh, I totally saw Peter getting thrown under the bus. That was part of the deal that Red made when he's like, and I got one more thing.
Yeah, but I thought he was just going to get killed. I didn't think like she would publicly proclaim him a terrorist, so to speak. A enemy of the state.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing about that speech is, you know, why was the literally every single member of the cabal put out there? Like, what was the purpose of that happening? Was it because the organization is completely dead and now Red is going to be the leader of the cabal and do something different? Or was it put out there just to separate the ties of the United States from the cabal in order to clear their name because maybe there's some bigger thing with Russia happening that they didn't want to be implicated with?
Because
2017 is still around the corner. We don't know what that 2017 comment from Fitch was.
Right on. Interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens here from here on out, because now that this is public, I mean, press and everyone are going to be digging through this. And I wonder if wrestlers, the press lady that was making Let's Get It On eyes with wrestler, I wonder if she's going to dig into this a little deeper.
Because
I think she's going to come back into play at some point. Do you wonder if maybe she's going to dig into this a little deeper and realize that there's more going on here than she thought?
I hope so. She seemed very interesting. Like when she came in.
She seemed very interested. She wanted.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess we'll switch over to wrestler then, because she was kind of eyeing him, and I was like, this is interesting, because if he does have feelings for Liz, you know, maybe he's realizing that, you know, especially when he got the note from the will, that maybe it's like, oh, I can't go ahead and do this anymore with you. You're truly in love with Tom. So maybe he's moving on. And what was interesting was how much she looked like his original fiance. Like, they almost had similar facial features, brown hair.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
It was, you know, I don't know if it was typecasted, but he's got a type.
Yeah, female. What? Playa.
Female brunette. That's why he's not into Liz anymore, because she's blonde.
I think he's still into Liz. This whole episode he spent, like, at her side, protecting her, and it was very, very sweet. Very sweet.
You look tired.
What's that? Yeah.
But your hair is great.
And his hair still looks perfect. Still looks perfect. Man, his hair is magic. Magic. I want to get whatever product he uses, man, because it's just fantastic. All right, well, how about that bullet that's hit by his face, by the way? That was a cool shot.
Yeah, and props to the visual effects department on that, because that was just the coolest looking thing. I was like, wow, like, they moved just fast enough that it just missed.
Yeah.
And then the look of horror on Liz's face as she's sitting there crouched on the steps. But man, the ripple effect on the screen, I think I texted you right when it happened. I was like, whoa, did you see that? That's cool.
Yeah, and the best thing about that, it wasn't even necessary. Like, you didn't need to have that. I mean, just the bullet miss would have been fine and would have been great for drama. That was just a nice little touch that really just added a little something to that scene.
Oh, yeah, because the minute they said gun, you know, the guy could have tackled them. You know, his arm goes up in the air and he just shoots into the air rather than shooting at them. So the fact that it came that close, yeah, just powerful, powerful stuff.
Yeah, and we had like a little bullet time. Now, if Wrestler would have jumped up and he was in like all black leather and started referring to everybody as like Morpheus and stuff, that would have been even cooler.
I was waiting for him to do the reverse cartwheel over the banister to the other side.
That would have been good. And then Liz could have also rose in black leather and been Trinity. Oh, could have had a whole like little parody. It could have been great.
Well, she was halfway there.
You missed a window.
She had the black jumpsuit on in the jail, so she was halfway there with the black.
See, this is where we should be on staff to make this work right, because that's totally what I would have done. And I'm sure people would have really appreciated a full-on Matrix parody in the middle of the courthouse.
Yep, Wrestler does the reverse cartwheel over the banister. As he's doing the cartwheel, a gun falls out of his holster into Liz's hand so that she can stand up and take the guy out. Would have been
awesome.
That's
right. I'll take the red pill. All right, the director. He's the mark of this episode. He's the mark. Wrestler was the inside man. The director is the mark. Apparently, he and the missus see Orrin Hufnagel at the Middleton building every Wednesday for couples therapy. Did you ever expect somebody as, I don't know, complicated, I guess, as the director is, and wow, just that he would go to couples therapy?
Well, the fact that they have protocol to go to couples therapy, like, they only meet at the building, they don't go together, and then the bodyguards have to go one downstairs, one upstairs.
Yeah, that brings a couple together. Eventually, through different floors. I like that touch. It was nice that how they got the director was a personal touch. That, you know what, everybody's got a relationship at some point. They've got things going on in their relationships, and it was nice that here's how. I mean, I feel bad for the missus now because her husband's like laying in somebody's living room, but I really like that they used a personal touch to catch him. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, we caught him while he was going and, you know, he's in the courthouse going to take a wee-wee or something. I mean, this to me was a lot cooler of an idea.
Yeah, buying a latte and you just nab him on the street with a black van or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Much better. Yeah. Much better.
Push him in the van and make it, I mean, generic. And I also noticed that he's really panicky and fearful in this episode. And just like Adam in the garden, he's brought down by an apple.
Don't do it. Women always tempt you.
Mm. Everybody does like apples. That's true. I really know this is something that he says while he's on the plane with Red. I know who you really are, Raymond, who you are
to her.
And I know why you did this. Does she, what do you take from those lines?
Well, I have to stick with my theory, right? That I know who you really are. So if I didn't stick with my theory, then I'd be, you know, a fraud, an imposter myself. But I still think my theory holds. You know, at this point, it still holds.
Which one? Liz's mom theory?
Yeah, the mother theory.
Okay. Well, aside from that nonsense, I know who you really are, Raymond, who you are to her, and I know why you did this, does she? I like that they allude to, or they blatantly almost say, that the director knows everything. So he's well aware. And I wonder if part of why Red is okay with dispatching him is because he doesn't want him to now. Like, at this point, my theory is once he says that, he's doomed himself.
Oh, totally.
Like, no matter what happened, he's dead.
Yeah, like, I think he maybe would have actually allowed the director to live until that comment came out. And he's like, you snivelly bastard, you, because you did this, you know, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. I'm gonna tell your secrets. And Red's like, no, you're not. I'm going to drop you in the Danish house.
And he did. And then he tosses him off the plane Con Air style. And if you never saw Con Air, it's exactly like Con Air. He just drops him, which I thought that was a nice touch. We talked about this, and I said that I thought he was going to die, but you did not. You thought he was going to make it through the season. So were you surprised then that they actually killed him?
Oh, no, not at all. I figured he was going to die at some point. I just didn't know where he was going to die. And I knew it was going to be because the Cabal ordered it. And so that part came true, right? Laurel said, hey, you know, he's been a problem. Can you take care of that for us? And Dredd's like, yeah, sure, no problem. So once that happened, you knew he was dead.
Hmm. You think there's going to be any blowback for Venezuela? Or is that kind of done now?
Oh, no, no. I think that there was enough to get the Venezuelan people, you know, back on their financial feet and everything. I think it was totally understandable from that entire concept.
Okay. Now, and I guess I do side note before we start, Liz. When he drops into the living room and it's like the dad lecturing his kids about texting and not paying attention right before Peter dropped in, that made me giggle a lot.
It was funny.
Because everyone who's a parent has had that moment. So we all kind of wish a dead body would drop in the living room or have that argument with our kids when they don't listen to us. I really like that. It was a nice little family touch.
He was specifically wanting him to watch the news and be informed of the world's events.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, oh, nice. Hey, I'm watching the news now, and that's that guy.
Great life lesson. Liz. Okay, Liz. She's free, cleared of every crime except the murder of Connolly. We talked about that a little bit. But throughout the episode, she was legitimately scared. And, I mean, she even wrote the will, which we talked about. Do you think, I mean, the entire episode, she really felt like she was going to be killed?
I think she was in good shape up until the point of the transfer. And then when the bullet whizzed by her head, then she was like, holy crap, you know, I'm actually really going to get killed. I don't think this is going to be able to be pulled off.
Yeah. I mean, I felt bad for her. She's poor thing. She's constantly being targeted. There's nothing she can do. She's in shackles the whole time. That's really too bad. But now she'll be with this deal that she got, which we're okay with this deal, right? We talked a little about that. We're okay with this deal. Makes sense to the character. It works.
Yeah, we always thought she was going to be with Red, kind of like partner in crime at some point, the minute season two ended.
Now, how do you like that she's able to still work there as an asset that they employ? So basically, her and Red are going to be working as partners.
And it would be interesting to see how much, you know, like season one, Red was always at the post office as the asset. It'll be interesting to see how much Red is on the go and Liz is at the post office as the asset feeding intel back to Red. So it'll be interesting to see if they both come together or if they come individually.
Now I got a prediction. You ready?
Sure.
Okay. I think by the end of this season, this is my prediction. I'm probably wrong. That's what a prediction means. I also thought the Packers were going to be in the Super Bowl. Not going to happen. My prediction is that Liz is going to, at the end of the season, find out that Red is part of the Cabal, if it doesn't happen sooner. And by the end of the season, her job for the next season, for season four, will be back kind of, it'll be similar. Like, she's still going to work directly with Cooper and Wrestler, but as an asset. But she's going to be pursuing Red. I think Red's going to be on the lam doing his own thing, and she's going to be trying to get to him. That's what I think is going to happen.
That's interesting. I thought Red becoming part of the Cabal was to do more of what he's been trying to do all along. I think there's a bigger end game. Like, he needs the Cabal's assets because there's still something even bigger than the Cabal that he's trying to infiltrate or take down.
What would be bigger than the Cabal?
Maybe something back in Russia. I mean, if my theory plays out that he is the mother in disguise, then remember, she's actually Russian. So maybe she's trying to do something to get back at the Russian government or infiltrate the Russian government to get back into her homeland, something of that nature. I don't know. I still think there's some big ties to Russia, and I'm really excited to see how Russia's going to come back into the equation.
Oh, it's going to happen to some degree. I mean, the mom is still in play, and we haven't really gone back to that. I think the mom's going to come up before anything, and I don't mean in your stupid theory. I mean in like the really real world. Which, if it ends up your theory ends up ever being true, I'm going to feel so bad for saying stupid so many times. But I'll have to eat so much crow. Oh, God, I'll choke.
If my theory comes true, I will retire from watching television because I can't.
Shut up. You can't get any bigger proclamations that you would never, ever hold up. I mean, half your life is watching television.
That's right.
The same three shows, but it's still television.
Over and over again.
God.
On repeat.
Such a dork. All right, what about that hug? The hug at the end that made millions tear up. I thought Twitter was going to explode.
And I love how they do this. I mean, this is the writer's room again, doing exactly what they do best, which is, okay, I know what you are to her, does she? And, oh, now we're hugging, so the shippers are back in, and they're like, oh, they're going to get together. And then we're all like, no, it's just like a creepy uncle thing. And you know, all of the theories from the day one are still in play.
Oh, like the romantic theories and
yeah,
whatnot? Totally. I didn't see any of that. I just saw people going, that hug just made me sad.
Oh, no. You know the shippers were out there. They were like, yes!
God, let it go. Let it go. Let it go. I personally want to thank the show for not doing what I expected. And that is, when this hug happened, and as soon as they saw each other, I knew they were going to hug. And I'm like, oh, it's coming. I'm going to get teary-eyed. And I was really, really, really worried they were going to do the old trope, which is they hug, they embrace, it's moving, and then at the last second, Red looks up nefariously. You know what I mean?
Oh, like as they're hugging, you get the eyes open and he smiles?
Yeah, the eyes open and he smiles, or yep. He looks concerned, or he something like that. Because we already had that moment with where he's back at the table in Hitchens' office. So I was really, really freaking out that they were going to do that. Because if they did that, it would have ruined that moment completely for me. Even if he is doing something nefarious, I just wanted that moment to hold, and I wanted him to have that moment after all of this, you know, this hard fought battle, so to speak, with the characters. I really wanted them to have that moment, and they didn't. That would have blown it for me, and they didn't. So I'm really thankful and grateful for that.
The one thing I was kind of glad didn't happen, because I was expecting it to happen, was that as she sees Red behind the bus and then starts walking to him, there would have been another shot, and Tom would have actually been sitting there waiting in the wings also. And then Tom sees Red and Liz hug, and Tom realizes that she's always going to be tied to Red, and that way he's never going to be able to be truly with the woman he loves. So I'm glad they didn't go the love story route. I think this was much better.
Yeah, simple, simple works sometimes. Just keep it simple.
Yep.
Oof, poor Liz, man. She has been on a run. Literally, on a run. Poor thing. But she's free now, so I'll be really curious to see where the show goes. Where this leads us, we've got many, many episodes left. So, I mean, really, half a season still.
Yeah, 12 to go yet.
Yeah, there's a lot still coming, people. So, I mean, they did a pretty good job of ramping it up. I'm really curious how the roller coaster keeps going.
And I love how they said they're going to change up the format, because now, literally, it's like it's brand new show. You can go back to procedurals now for the next couple weeks, like John said they might be doing in his interview. Because it's truly like the serialized part of it is it ended. It's over.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, Red is our final character. Red, Red, Red. He's the mastermind. He's Danny Ocean. And he is absolutely right. Everyone does like apples. If you don't, it must be because you're allergic. There's no other reason why you couldn't love apples. They are delicious.
And the one thing I loved about the director when he was hitting those apples was that he actually tapped them to see if they were wax. I thought that was kind of funny.
Now, well, that's being smart, right?
Right.
My question, what kind of apples do you prefer? I mean, this is a real deep, thought-provoking question. You like red, delicious apples or whatever they're called? Or do you like the honey crisps
all the way?
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, the kids eat a lot of Granny Smiths, but I'm a Honeycrisp guy. I like the expensive stuff.
I thought it was a nice little nod at the apples of the red delicious kind. So, you know, red. Yep. Get it? That was a nice little touch. And then those are my preference. They are sweeter and more delicious. So I would have succumbed to.
You want to know a true story?
Not really.
Or a fact?
But you're going to tell me anyway.
I don't like apples.
Really?
I don't. For some reason, I eat apples, and I don't know if it's...
You work for the cabal.
I do, because they affect the roof of my mouth weird. So I don't like apples. I like applesauce, but I don't like apples.
You're weird. That just sounds weird.
I don't.
God, you're a communist. All right. Well, why don't you go back to Russia? Hello, Peter. That was my favorite line. Honestly, I know that there's a lot of great lines. People are like, no. The line where he's like, hello, Peter, once Peter realizes that he's doomed.
Right.
I love that delivery of that very, very simple line. I thought it was great. Now, his extra, we've talked a lot about Red, and I mean, this entire episode was all Red's plan. So, I mean, it's great that we finally see how it was going to play out. But the extra condition was the seat at the table of the very cabal he just crippled. And we've alluded to it several times. Ultimately, what do you think this means?
I think that Red wanted to be in the know with these people because there's information they have that he needs, and it might still be about his family. Because that's the only reason I would think you'd want to be with these people that you hate so much, because there's something they have that I need, and the thing I need is to still to find out what happened that night.
Mm-hmm. I think everything is part of the plan. I think the only reason that he had to get Liz out is because she crossed the line and shot Connelly, which put her in the crosshairs. He needed to do everything he could to keep her out of jail because he needs her down the road. Obviously, he doesn't need her yet, but he needs her down the road. I do think he cares about her. I'm not on that bandwagon where he doesn't care about her. I do think he cares about you, but or about Liz. But I totally believe that his end game is personal, and it's been in play for the last couple of years, and he just needs Liz. Liz is just another piece in that puzzle. And getting in the cabal is another piece of that puzzle because, like you said, he needs some information to further his end game.
So in that sense, you're actually coming to my side from last season. Because I said last season that Red was always the whole time just using her for his plan and doesn't actually care about her.
Yeah, well, I'm coming into he does care about her, but he is using her. So it's kind of like a mix.
Okay.
You know, it's somewhere in the middle. It's a middle ground. Now, do you think this is the real Raymond Reddington? There's been some allusion to that. I mean, obviously, taking your mom theory aside, if that's proven that that can't be true, do you still think this is not the real Red Reddington?
I mean, everything that I used to set up my mother theory is still in play. You know, the plastic surgery, the you look different, where have you been for 4 years between 1990 and 1994, the things that the director said in this episode, the things we saw in the preview. I mean, everything is going to be coming up to the fact that he is not the man who was a naval officer being groomed for admiral. That person is somebody different.
Okay. Just checking. I'm on board with that. I'm getting on board with that. I've always been on the fence. Now it's the same guy. But the more and more we get into this conspiracy, I start thinking, maybe I'm just dumb. Because it really seems like maybe he's not the Reddington we think he is. But I don't necessarily mean that makes him a nefarious character. I still think he's still a sympathetic character at the heart of it. I just think maybe there's more to this character than we think.
And what if it's a programming thing? You know, like we're talking,
like he's a robot?
Not a robot, but
he's a Terminator. Like come back from the future.
He had the ability to mess with Liz's memories, right? So what if this shell on the outside is Reddington, right? We're talking about plastic surgery and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe it is Reddington on the outside, but maybe he was conditioned kind of like the Lord Baltimore with her being her twin sister at the same time. Mm. So maybe he, in his mind, is actually something else. Maybe it was part of a program for sleeper agents or something of that nature.
Hmm. There's a theory. There's a lot of theories going around. And you scour the internet, there are a lot of theories as to who exactly he is. So that'll be very, very interesting. And where do you think we go from here, sir?
That's a really good question. I definitely think it's going to be procedural for the next couple of weeks.
Really? You think so, huh?
Yeah. It's going to be a couple one and dones and kind of get you into the groove. And then they'll go for their like spring break. And then there'll be a little more of a serialized nature towards the ramp up for the season finale.
Well, I think you're still going to get some serialized stuff. I think you're going to see Red putting some pieces into place. I think you're going to see him navigate the intricacies of the cabal and kind of weave in and out of the power circles. And I think so that we're going to see another player or two that is deep into that organization is kind of what I'm assuming. that's where I think it's going to go. And I think we're going to see Liz maybe start to dig into something, maybe find out a little bit more about Red than she intended. And also, I mean, Tom, where's Tom going to come back into play? Because he's still out there. He still has a thing for Liz. Liz is cleared now, so that portion is irrelevant. But he still has feelings for her. She still has feelings for him. So he's definitely not out of the picture yet.
Yeah, and I think that's the first thing I want to see coming out next week is how Tom and Liz kind of meet up and reconcile. Do they go back to the restaurant? You know, how do they actually meet up with each other?
That'd be interesting. We got a lot more show to go, and I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to do it, man. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
It was just really, really good. I mean, I've watched it 3 times now already. It's fantastic. It was a great episode.
Fun episode. I mean, the thing I like most about this episode is that it, like, the first half felt quick and zippy and fun and very much like a heist movie, which, like I said, I love heist movies. And the second half felt like it went back to The Blacklist, you know? I mean, it was just like, hey, we did this thing. We got now we're back in our mold and in our normal pattern. So it was nice to see that play out because it kind of gave me a little variance in how the episode normally would go. I really liked that. It was a real fun episode. All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode. Remember, be sure we've got more coming. Don't hang up yet or don't quit listening. There's still more show, but we're done with the actual episode stuff. Remember to be sure to download the Blacklist Exposed app for iOS and Android, and be sure to go even deeper into the mystery of Red Reddington by visiting our partner Blacklist site, theblacklistnbc.com, now fully redesigned for 2016 and mobile-friendly. We've got some cool theories going on over there. Go read them. Check out the new sections, including a music feature on the Blacklist section, and the forums are back, so discuss away. Go even deeper into each episode at theblacklistnbc.com. And now, let's relive some of those great stories from Red with this week's Red's Rhetoric.
Well, this week, 61% of you have a fascination with graveyards, or just like knowing you can have Red in your back pocket, as Red Debt won last week. This week's first clip, Red finally shows us his hand as the plan is set into motion.
Thank you all for coming. I apologize for the security protocols, but my better half insists. Just the fact that you are all here is a testament to the deep concern we share for Elizabeth Keene's safety and well-being. The threat from forces within is proving to be more powerful and far-reaching than one could ever have imagined. I've asked you here because we have one chance to save Elizabeth. But to do that, we must work together. So, oh my God, this is why I'm a terrible bridge player. With anyone else, Steve Littitt would have won the North American pairs. We didn't even make it through regionals. I abhor working with a partner. Sharing my hand with anyone goes against every instinct I have. But such is life, here we are. So, 5 weeks ago, I called the Metro PD to report a sighting of Raymond Reddington at the Del Rio Diner. I created a hostage crisis so you would be so kind as to release my attorney, Marvin Girard, from prison. That day, Marvin and I conceived a plan to exonerate Elizabeth Keene by targeting the cabal and, in particular, the director. Since that day, everything we've done has been in service of that plan. The Verdian case has resulted in catastrophic damage to the cabal's finances. The client list we took from the gin gave us leverage with key players in the cabal to further isolate and weaken the director's influence. With Andras Halmi, or part of him, we cut a gaping hole in the director's golden parachute, leaving him nothing to run with and causing even further distrust and divisions within the cabal. But the Zal bin Hassan case has opened a window of opportunity we must slip through with great haste. To save Elizabeth, we must execute a specific attack, one so impactful it will force the cabal to completely abandon the director and publicly exonerate Elizabeth Keene.
What the hell do you have in mind?
See, this is why I don't play well with partners. Don't fret, Harold. I'm holding all the trumps. I'll be the declarer. You be the dummy, and we'll win the hand.
In the second clip this week, Red chats with Peter about how famous he's about to become.
Welcome back. Boy, you were out. Like carrying a bag of boulders. What the hell have you done?
I envy anyone who can sleep soundly on a plane. Then again, I've never been injected with propofol. You have the post-toasties?
Where the hell are we? What is this? I'm your hostage now.
Heavens, no. Nothing nearly so pedestrian. The fact is, you're not my prisoner at all. You're officially in the custody of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela. You must know Mr. Diaz, foreign minister and national security advisor to the Venezuelan president.
Mr. Kosiopoulos, on behalf of my government, you are hereby under arrest for war crimes and crimes against humanity, violation of the Geneva Convention and international law as established by the 1998 Rome Statute.
Oh, my God.
Oh, your God can't help you now, Peter. You're traveling over the Atlantic on the Venezuelan president's Airbus on your way to The Hague.
You're insane.
I wouldn't know. But you're going to have the distinguished honor of becoming the first American official ever to be charged with even a single war crime, let alone the slew of them you will undoubtedly be accused of before the week is out.
This won't happen. The United States isn't party to the Rome Treaty. We don't recognize its authority.
But Venezuela does. And cases can be referred to the court by any country that is a signatory.
You know as well as I do, even better given your position, the International Court has been investigating the U.S. government and the CIA for any number of alleged crimes. The drone program, the rendition of foreign citizens, torture as a means of interrogation.
The chief prosecutor has made it clear. He does not need American permission to move forward.
He needs an American in the flesh. The court will not try anyone in absentia. So far, no country has had the courage to deliver one of your countrymen to the court until now. You're a trendsetter, Peter. Who knew?
I am the CIA Director of Clandestine Services. Do you have any idea what's going to happen to you? This is an act of war. My government will never let it stand.
Precisely what I'm counting on.
Which was your favorite this week? Be sure to vote in the Twitter polls or comment on Facebook. If you like to be the declarer rather than the dummy, then vote Red Trump. Or if you are a trendsetter, just like the director, be sure to vote Red Trend.
Another favorite line of mine from that episode where he says, which you just heard in the clip, where he goes, "You're insane," where the director says, "You're insane." He goes, "I wouldn't know."
That's good.
A funny psychology joke. I like that. All right, now we're on Special Agent Intel. This is where we tell you what some of our listeners had to say about the episode that we just talked about. First, let's hear what Rory has to say.
Hey, Troy, Aaron, Rory calling in. I just wanted to say thank you again for Wednesday night. Unbelievable. John Bolkenkamp, Hisham. It was wonderful. That's why there's nobody better than you guys out there. I know you guys don't watch the previews for next week, but I'm curious to see what you guys think, where the story goes from here. I thought the director episodes was phenomenal, ended the way it should. Wish we got a little Solomon in there. But again, just curious to get your thoughts on where we go from here. Talk soon, guys.
We just gave a bunch of them.
We did, but I'm surprised Solomon didn't come into play.
He was in the previously on clip. Does that count?
I suppose so.
And I actually, Rory, I did watch the trailer this week only because I forgot to turn the TV off. Oops.
Does that mean we can talk about it or no?
I would say, well, I mean, I don't know. Let's wait to the very, very end. That way, if there's other people like me, I don't want to ruin it for them.
Okay.
All right, let's move on to Ruth's. She wrote in and said, "I love that during the John Bolkenkamp interview podcast, when he was talking about music on the show, playlist for each actor, etc., he admitted to being sort of a music neophyte. He specifically mentioned Andra Day and how he had just heard her and he loved her singing so much that he would have to figure out a way to use one of her songs on the show. Bam! Tonight's ending was so perfect with Liz leaving custody and then sharing such a tender moment with Red to Andra's song, Rise Up. I have treasured her singing since first hearing the CD last year, and after your interview with John, I just put an extra bit of icing on my cake. Thank you so much for all you do for the fans like me who are totally addicted to everything The Blacklist."
Yeah, it was a really great use of that song. I heard it and I was like, I'm actually going to check out her music now.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you can use more Chris Isaac songs, never go wrong there. I'm just saying, John.
Right.
You can probably get them cheap too. All right, the doctor is in. Doc H, that is. I reiterate, wow, the soundtrack choices on The Blacklist are as good as ever. Man, a lot of people loving the music this week. I also feel that part one and part two together could have played as a movie, not a Lifetime / Oxygen channel twofer, but a movie where I go to a theater and pay to sit in a seat.
I am so with you, Doc.
Yeah, me too. It's a lot better than The Revenant, I can tell you that. Next, my conspiracy theory exaltation. Man, I got that vibe. The goosebumps on the neck and arms. When everyone started filtering in the Red's lair and started surrendering their pistols and tech devices, this is my favorite movie sensation, one that sends me to viewer heaven. When the lead says, oh yeah, by the way, my lawyer Marv and I concocted this whole scheme a month and a half ago. Yeah! This is why I watch serialized TV, for the huge payoff. When it eventually comes, the action and conspiracy storytelling and writing this episode felt a little like Ocean's 11, The Sting, Heat, etc. With that monster oh wow factor, when we realized we had almost no idea what to expect. Sad to see Stratham go. Put Pat Aaron on his heaving shoulder for me. You're welcome. Although it was nice to see him go in grand fashion a la Red. But what better way is there to get Dutch teens to watch the nightly news? But bring it to the house. Front door preferred over ceiling entry. Cheers, Doc H.
I still love him dropping in from the sky. That's so good.
That was. Those poor people. It's a good thing that they were texting because they might have been a little closer to the television and got crushed.
And I have to say, the big bads have gone down pretty awesomely. Berlin, the way that they're having shots and then getting shot. I thought that was a really nice touch. And then, of course, the big bomb explosion in the box for Alan. And then,
oh, yeah, the head go boom.
Yep. And then dropping him from the sky.
What's next? What's going to happen to Hitchens? Huh?
I guess the question I have is, did they shoot him before they dropped him? Or was he screaming the whole way down?
Screaming the whole way down. You don't kill him first. No. Mm-mm. He just fell like an angel from heaven. That's what happens when you eat those biblical apples. All right. And finally, Andrew, this is a great follow-up episode after last week's episode. From the meeting of Red's Justice League / Ocean's team to the end, this episode was great. We're going with Red Avengers. Finally, after more than a season of Cabal buildup, through weeks of traipsing around through cornfields and hanging around shipping containers, sidestepping peril at the hands of Russian assassins and random roadside hillbillies, Red is finally ready to let someone else in on his plans. I admit that I thought that this entire hour would be a total caper, and that team assembling felt like a confirmation, but I was wrong, as always. Then we find out what Red demanded from the Venezuelans after kidnapping the director, in which the episode turns into a political thriller from a heist. Yeah, I like that too. Laurel Hitchin tries to threaten the Venezuelan foreign minister that he'll be bringing the wrath of America down on his country, but that's not a war anybody wants. And as Red reminds us, the most immediate result will be the global spectacle of a high-ranking American official being charged with war crimes. Good play, Red Reddington. If she's worried about looking like an idiot for letting King go, well, would you look at that. The real culprit was just delivered to the courthouse by a crazy-eyed man in a product placement Mustang. Sorry, that made me laugh. Then we see the director accidentally, air quotes, fall to his death at a German household, who I thought initially they were part of the white supremacist group Tom infiltrated in season two. Keep on rocking in the free world, Andrew Jeeves.
Get it? Air quotes. Dad joke.
Yep. Yep. You just ruined it. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Is there anything else you want to talk about, Troy? I mean, I think we've covered as much as we can. I'm sure there's something we missed. Somebody will tell us. But
I think it's nice that we get to take this giant deep breath this week as we wait to see what's coming up next. Because, man, this has been a rapid 10 episodes.
The one thing I am most excited about is that we can get Liz back to the front of the episodes.
Yes.
I feel like she's kind of been a MacGuffin, so to speak. I mean, she's been a plot device more than a character a lot of times this season. And I know that's by design. I mean, it had to be that way because that's just the way that the show is going. But I really like that now that she's back on the task force to a degree, she can be a more important part of every week. And the puzzles that remain.
I concur.
Well, that will conclude this episode. Be sure to follow us on Twitter this season at The Blacklist GSM, where we live tweet during the East Coast feed, and we use the show's hashtag, The Blacklist. Please join us. I mean, it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun we have on there with everybody that does that. The show's cast also does it too. So if you're a big fan, you should definitely be checking that out when it's on.
And we should also mention that the Writers Room now actually has their own Twitter account.
Yeah, so, which is
I think it's at Blacklist Writers.
Yeah, something like that. We also have a Facebook group to search for The Blacklist Exposed and join us for the fun.
Intel from you is what we want, and you can send that in to the agency a few ways. You can interact with us on Tumblr, Instagram, or visit theblacklistexposed.com. Give us a call, leave a message if you want, using our send voicemail button on the website. You can even do that through your smartphone, just like Rory did today.
You can also subscribe to the podcast in iTunes and leave us a review if you do, please. They are really appreciated. Or listen from the website if you are really on the go. If you like, make sure you download our app for iOS and Android powered by Spreaker. It's free. Free. It's like America. It's free. You can also find all the intel and analysis about this episode for The Director Part 2 by visiting theblacklistexposed.com. Big thanks for listening, guys. We genuinely and sincerely appreciate all of you that listen every week. But don't forget to answer our profiling question as you end. Why does Red want a seat at that table?
And don't forget, special episode coming out midweek with Nicole Phillips talking about the comic book in Series 2. So don't make sure you download this one and that one as well this week as we wait for next week's special stuff where we get to talk about, is Red an imposter? Dun, dun,
oh, yeah.
Dun.
That's right. The end thing, the stinger, the preview, whatever you want to call
preview,
it.
Preview, yes. The preview, box is yes. Back.
I actually watched it for once in my lifetime. I've watched it. I normally avoid those like the plague because I don't want to know anything because it's always red herring anyway. It's always throwing you off. It's always meant to be misdirection. And they do have a new blacklister who apparently knows Red and calls him an imposter, it seems. But it also could be the way that the preview's edited.
That's right. He could be talking and looking at somebody completely different. You never know.
Yes, that's the one thing that's another reason why I don't want. There's two reasons why I don't watch it. One, I don't want to be spoiled and see scenes I don't want to know. And also because it's always throwing me in a different direction than it really is. So why bother?
But if you believe anything that happened on Twitter during the course of the evening, they said this episode this week has got nothing on next week's episode. So I am excited.
I am pretty excited. That I'll be honest, the preview got me really, really jazzed. For what's going to happen in that episode. And I can't remember that actor's name, and I'll know it by next week because we'll be talking about it. But the actor that says that line, I've seen him in other stuff, and he's a really good actor. He's a really good character actor. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, he's that guy.
Yep, he's that guy. That guy, there's always that guy. And by the way, I think we're completely done. I just want to say one more time, I really want to put together a team. If anybody's willing to join me, I want to steal something cool. I do. I want to have a heist now. I have to have a heist. I mean, we'll put it back. We're not going to keep it.
Yeah.
But let's just take something.
Just borrow it. Just borrow it so we know that we can actually accomplish the heist.
Yeah. And then we'll just leave it on the front door. You know, just leave it right there at the steps or something. Hope Diamond. Let's go for that. Let's go big.
There you go.
Go big or go home, which we're going to do right now. It's time to go home, guys.
You bet. We'll see you next week. Take care. Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at @H_Outsider. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.